Good morning again. Thank you all for coming to our 30th Annual Strategic Decisions Conference. I'm Steve Winokur. I cover U.S. multi-industry and electrical equipment, including 3M. We're very fortunate once again for the fourth year running to be joined by Inge Thulin, Chairman, President, and CEO of 3M, a company on track to more than $32 billion of sales this year by my numbers, gross margin in excess of 48%, operating margins crossing 22%, and return on capital in the high teens. With a dividend payout ratio of almost, about 45%, and buybacks we're planning on in the $2 to $4 billion range this year. The 2017 targets themselves, we're talking about 4 to 6% organic growth, 9 to 11% EPS growth, more than 20% ROIC, and 100% free cash flow conversion, plus CapEx rising to the $1.9 to $2.3 billion range. So impressive numbers. Inge has been at 3M for more than 30 years, but took over the helm almost 2.5 years ago now in February of 2012. I'm sure you'd like to know that the stock is up 61% since that time, almost 17% outperformance versus the S&P. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Inge, and then we'll go to Q&A here for fireside chat following that. I'd like to remind all of you now that we have those anonymous index cards for you to fill out questions, raise them up. Runners will bring them up to me, and as always, I prioritize those over my own.
Thank you, Steve, and good morning to all of you. It's a pleasure to be here this morning and talk about 3M. And I would like to start by giving a couple of comments relative to the vision of 3M before I start to talk about our strategies, our three key levers, and some of the fundamental strengths that is driving return to our investors. So we laid out a very clear vision that is explaining what we are all about and the purpose of 3M. And as you know, a vision is about what you do, how you do it, and where you do it. It should be authentic to you. It should call out a competitive advantage, and it should be authentic and holistic. And when you think about 3M in terms of our geographical reach and our portfolio base, for us, we can, in fact, advance, enhance, and improve every company, every home, and every life around the world. Is in terms of a vision, in a good stretch, and we can do it in terms of every company. We are, if it's a sophisticated industry with platforms, we are there to help to spec in order to them for them to produce more cost-effective products. If it's in every home, and most people will think immediately about Scotch-Brite, Scotch Post-it, Filtrete. But it's more than that. It's many products in homes that we have helped other companies to produce, if that is refrigerators, stoves, flat screen TVs, etc. And then every life for us is around healthcare, schools, sustainability, and community. So that's an important element relative to the purpose of the company. That is then supplemented by six strategies, and the strategies here are interconnected, interdependent, and very important for us. The four first ones are all about growth. The fifth one is around people, and the last one is around operational excellence. They are important in the way that you see in the first strategies, which is around where to play, that we talk about relevance to our customers. We believe if you're not relevant to your customers, the life will be pretty tough for you. You can see in the second strategy that we call out profitable market share. Market share gains are important, but they need to be profitable. And you can also see that in the third strategy, it's starting with a statement, invest in innovation. Innovation is the heartbeat of 3M. We are very committed to it. And one of four reasons why we're able to give you prime return on your investment in 3M. Now, we are an enterprise of $31 billion U.S. dollars as we ended last year, and you can see here that in the five-year plan, we have an organic local currency growth target of 4 to 6%. We have five business groups, all going from the size of almost 11 billion to almost 4.5 billion in size. And it's industrial, which have 10.6 billion US dollar sales with a target in the plan of 3 to 6% growth. Healthcare, that is a 5.3 billion US dollar business with a target of 4 to 7% growth. Consumer, that is a 4.4 billion US dollar business with a target of 3 to 6% growth. Safety and graphics, 5.7 billion and a target of 4 to 6% growth. And then electronics and energy, 5.4 billion and a target of 4 to 7% growth in the five-year plan. Now, there is four things that is the fundamental strengths of 3M, and they are important to understand because that is what is driving our returns and also key elements in order for us to get leverage of everything we do. The first one is around technology, and it's important because that is where we are able to share and combine elements of the base, broad-based technology portfolio to produce unique, differentiated products translated to premium margins. That is a key element of 3M, and I will comment in a second relative to our technology platforms. The second one is around manufacturing. We have a good footprint and we have a very good technology that including process and trade secrets that can be used in order to produce products to a very low unit cost. The third one is our global capabilities where we have a very big and huge subsidiary network around the world. And we have done business for many, many years in all countries around the world. It's an important element because when we commercialize, we do that locally in every country around the world. And there is infrastructure in place to all of the 30 divisions in the company to utilize. And then finally, our brand equity, if that is 3M as a standalone for the enterprise or if it's brands to specific markets, if it's Littmann stethoscope in healthcare, MicroPort tape, if it's Tegaderm, transparent dressings, etc. The brands are very important for us and really a fundamental strength as we build out the businesses. As we move ahead, there is three key levers in order to create even more value for us. It is portfolio management, investing in innovation and business transformation. And I will make some comments on all three of them. They are important in order for us to build an even stronger 3M as we move ahead. The first one around portfolio management, we have categorized our portfolio in order for us to make sure we have a good understanding of the future additional investment that needs to be done. And you can see here we categorized them in heartland, push forward, and strategic review. Heartland divisions are five divisions in the company, stand for one-third of our sales revenue and slightly more in profitability. Commonality for them is that they are utilizing multiple 3M technology platforms. They are global in scale. They have a very strong brand equity, and we are able to be one of the leader in those markets that we are participating in. The market that they are competing is growing slightly below the average of 3M company. Push forward is very much the same categorization as heartland divisions with the difference that they are not global in scale yet. They are not using all the technology platforms and the opportunity is big for us, meaning that the market that they are competing is growing above the average of 3M. Meaning additional investment here will give us better return, faster growth as we move ahead. And then you can see strategic review businesses that during the last 5 years when we made this analysis had underperformed relative to 3M's high standard, meaning all of them made business, all of them made money, all of them are good businesses, but they had underperformed relative to average. So what we're doing there is type of addressing that and see how we can improve their performance. Now, we have a very strong global presence, and as I said, we have done business internationally for many years. And when you look upon the change in the portfolio on a geographical base, if you go back to 2003, 21% of our business at that time was in the developing economies. As of last year, that's 35%, and we estimate that in the plan moving forward to be 40 to 45%. Now, why that is very attractive for us is when we look upon our portfolio and we will look upon the evolution of a country, what is happening in all countries in terms of evolution is that the first step is that infrastructure is built. When infrastructure is in place, manufacturing starts to expand, meaning also developed companies and countries' economies are investing. After that, safety regulations are improving because the standards need to be the same as in the developed world. After that, when people have started to earn money and can start to spend, the consumer retail business is taking off. And then finally, healthcare regulation is becoming developed and implemented in those countries. When you think about our businesses, we are part of all those steps in the evolution of a country. And as I showed you earlier, and as you know, some of those businesses that will take off later in that cycle is also the most profitable for 3M. So this means that we are part of the evolution of any country around the world, and the upside is very good for us on a geographical basis with very good upside return for investors. Now, one thing that we've decided to do is also to step up relative to investment in research and development. I said that in the third strategy, it started with a statement, invest in innovation. Historically, we have spent 5.5% to 5.6% in research and development. And we are stepping that up to closer to 6%. This is the heartbeat of 3M. It's important for us in order to make sure that we have investment that is targeting very specifically on new products as we move ahead. And it's also the differentiation where you can see that you can get a global competitive strength in order to do that in all markets around the world. And it will maintain and increase the value to your customers. And that is, of course, one of the reasons that we have premium operating margins and return on invested capital. Now, we last year spent $1.7 billion, and which is now moving to 6% of sales by 2017. And the important thing is the front end of this. You can have the technology platforms, which we are blessed to have, but we also have a very robust process in the front end of the organization. We're basically using two processes. One is called customer-inspired innovation, which is used very much for spec-in businesses. And then we have something we call insights to innovation, or I2I, which is very much used on consumable businesses. Those two processes is the starting point for us relative to later the outcome from the technology platforms and the commercialization of those products. It's a very powerful tool that is used in all businesses around the world and interconnected with our customers in order for them to have a say very early in terms of what we develop based on our platforms. Now, organic growth is our primary strategy, but we will complement with merger and acquisitions, and they will be based on the portfolio work that we did. So we'll be build on the portfolio prioritization, will be in terms of building out the relevance in target areas, will be in higher growth area spaces, and could also be increased focus on technologies. And we have also, during the last 2.5 years, enhanced our integration capabilities. So we feel that for the right type of deal that we are ready to make a move in this area as well. And we have laid it out very good relative to our playbook, where you can see that in the heartland, it's to bolster technology position and pursue adjacencies if that's coming our way. And in the push forward is to build scale and facilitate market penetration on a global base. It's also in terms of the process where we had in the past a bottom-up process. We have complemented that. We now also have a top-down on the corporate level in order to make sure that we in some cases can see acquisitions that can be broad-based in different business groups. And the one we did last year, which was Ceradyne, is an example of that. And then you can see, of course, the value creation for us is important for us when we do this, and they should be accretive to our financial targets as we move ahead. The third lever is business transformation, and it's for us to get the more effective and productive and agile 3M, and also, of course, increase our customer intimacy and responsiveness. A very important tool for us in order to become even more productive as we move ahead, and has to do with the whole planning process from customers the whole way back to manufacturing. When we think about our return to shareholders, you can see here on the dividend say that 2014 is the 56th years consecutive year with annual increase, and as you know, that increase was 35%. We have paid dividends without interruption for 97 years now. And you can see as we move ahead, you should think about the assumption here that increases will grow in line with our earnings over time. When you think about gross stock repurchases, you can see here that on the period from 2003 to 2012, we had $18.7 billion of cash returned to shareholders during that period of time. And 2013, it was $5.2 billion, and we estimate now to be $4 to $5 billion for this year. And you should think about it like the share repurchase program. We'd add 2 to 3% to earnings growth annually. So we have done our work historically relative to return to shareholders, and our objective is to continue to do that also as we move ahead. We laid out our five-year plan back in 2012, on the 8th of November 2012, and Steve just commented on that in the introduction here. We can see an EPS growth of 9 to 11%, organic revenue growth of 4 to 6, return on invested capital around 20, and then free cash flow conversion around 100%. Just a comment here on the first quarter that just ended, you can see our earnings per share was $1.79, up 11.2%. Sales was $7.8 billion, up $2.6 in dollar terms, but an organic local currency growth of 4.6%. And you can see healthcare had a 6% growth, industrial and safety and graphic 5%, electronic and energy 4%, and consumer 3%. You can also see that our margins went up to 21.9%, which is an improvement again year over year versus an already high margins last year. And as I said, we returned $2.3 billion of cash to shareholders via dividends and share repurchases. So by that, I hold it here, and then I think we go over, we see the vision here again, and then after that we go over and take the Q&A here. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Inga. And just to remind everybody, please raise your cards in the air. Those who get it collected and brought up to me. In the meantime, Inga, I'm now reflecting on the number of years you've already been up here, both as COO and now as CEO. And the changes have been significant, right? You reorganized into five units. You've brought, I would argue, focus and prioritization to the organization. That means saying no to many things as well as yes in a consensus-driven environment historically. You've had a strategic portfolio review that you talked about. You have a desire to pick up M&A as well. Jettison some long-standing businesses if necessary, if they're not fixed. You've increased leverage on the balance sheet. You've picked up the dividend, the pace of share buybacks, as well as CapEx, all as you're investing for growth. So lots of changes since you've been there. What would you characterize as evolutionary? What's been behind the sense of urgency for these changes? How has the culture changed to accommodate all of that?
Yeah. Well, we don't look upon this as evolutionary or revolutionary. We look upon it like a way for us to improve an already strong 3M. And as you said earlier, I've been with 3M for over 30 years and had a good feeling when I came into the position of what I thought was pockets of excellence and then pockets of things that we could improve as we move ahead. Very early had a process where we, together with the management, start to look upon certain thing of the company. The vision was one thing that was developed at that time, and the six strategies was developed with a management team, which is bigger than the direct reports to me.
And why that was important was that the other thing we did was after the strategies were type of set top down, we developed tools and metrics in order to measure them. And that was developed by the organization. That took us from February of 2012 until June. And it was a process where a lot of people in the company were involved in order to help us to do that. And I think that was a key element to get buy-in for the changes. So people felt that they were part of it. And we did an internal opinion survey here like 6 months ago, and the result was very good relative to understanding of what needs to be done. So I think there was no bad reaction. And I will say that historically, because everywhere I've done business in the past, I've always prioritized the businesses. And I know what will happen. The first reaction is always for those people that believe that are down on the left-hand corner and maybe is not so appreciated, right? So I spend a lot of personal time with the leaders on those businesses in order to make sure that it was clear that it's not personal, it's business. And number two, we identify so we can help you in order to improve. And I think that's the fundamental of businesses. When you not have the best time, there's no reason to scream every quarter of why is it not working well. I think the point is identify it with facts, engage and help them in order to improve as we move ahead. So I would say the process worked very well, and it was a process of a little bit of top-down from the beginning, but a lot of engagement immediately after that. So I think it's working well for us, and the results are coming, and I feel good about that process.
Are you early, would you argue, in the organizational change from here, or now you feel like you're in a stabilized mode and it's a question? What's next in terms of what's changing for the company?
Well, I think it's, first of all, business is always changing, and we need to change with that. We have consolidated a lot. As I said, in the first strategy, there was a very clear message of customer relevance. People look upon a strategy and they type of, okay, there was a clear message. If we're not relevant to customers, we will not win. So many things happen in the organization where we consolidated and realigned divisions in order for us to be more relevant and bigger in the front end with customer, faster to do business with, but also the investment in research and development, which is relevance to our customers. So I would say that this is an ongoing process as always, and the portfolio management is nothing you do this year, now it's gone. That will continue to move as you go ahead, and you do it for the right reasons.
So we have a number of questions from the audience. Some are around portfolio management in the strategic areas. Mm-hmm. Some are around the current environment. Let's see if we can knock off some of the current environment issues first. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be true that you guys are in a pretty unique position, actually, with regard to the global economy. So can you describe what you're seeing in terms of the current organic growth environment across geographies and segments as well?
Yeah.
And volume versus price weight.
Yeah. When we talked about 2014, we have said 3-6% organic local currency growth for the year. First quarter, we came out 4.6%. So you think about it, it's in the middle of what we have said. There were some positive things there in the first quarter, and I'll just comment on that because I think it's important as we move ahead. West Europe, we had a 3% organic local currency growth. And we have said for the year flat to 3%. We came in 3% the first quarter, and we see things are moving positively in West Europe, even if it's coming from a lower level. And for me, that's an important sign because, in my view, there is West Europe is 24% of the global GDPs in West Europe. It's a big domestic market. The things that you maybe don't like with West Europe in terms of labor laws, etc., but the big market is there domestically. So that was good. So I feel that it's a slight momentum going there. In Asia, we had relatively good growth. We had electronic, generally speaking, that is moving around from different countries out there, had 5% growth. You look upon China specifically, you take base business in China was 8%, which is up from 7 a year ago. So a slight uptick in China. And when we look upon China for the total year, we think that will be mid to high single digit of growth, right? So that's okay. And Japan had a very good first quarter, but there's some elements going on there relative to change in the VAT system. So we had a good growth the first quarter. We believe that will be low to mid single digit for the year. United States for us was 3% organic local currency growth, which was slightly below our expectation, but we know why, and the reason was two. One was construction. We are big in traffic signage. A lot of those projects was moved forward due to weather, and then it was traffic in stores on the retail and consumer side. Those were the two things that were related to first quarter, so I'm not concerned about that. Latin America is, we had 11% growth, organic local currency growth in Brazil, 11%. We had 15% in Mexico. Generally speaking, that region maybe have slowed a little bit versus past years, but still moving along very well. And Latin America for us, we have a very good balanced portfolio there, and it's probably the most developing region of the world for us. So I would say that we are not changing any guidance for the year relative to growth. We thought 3 to 6. If anything, I feel personally a little bit more confident that our model is working, right? I was pleased with 4.6% organic local currency growth on our big business. I felt good about that. Not totally happy, but I start to feel a little bit better.
Okay. One of the follow-up questions here is about how big is your business in China today? How large?
It's around 9% of the total revenue of the company, and Japan is more or less the same size.
And you mentioned, I think you mentioned mid-single digits just now, growth expectations for China.
Mid to high single. Yeah.
So that's the question here is, if China GDP in fact turns out to be mid-single digits over the next few years, what rate would you expect to grow? What multiple of China specifically?
Yeah. So we are if you look upon our total business, we are expecting 1.58 times IPI, Industrial Production Index. That's how we measure it, and that's what we expect from China, despite how the economy will grow. My view on China is that's the second biggest economy in the world. There is still growth there that are very acceptable and respectable, and we need to capitalize on that. And the penetration is still very low in China. So I would say that we should do at least 1.5x IPI in those economies as we move ahead. And I know that we have capacity and capabilities to do that. So that's why estimating as we go ahead.
Well, maybe we can dig into China just a little bit further. You know, the challenge historically for 3M in China, one of the businesses was consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Given the relative strength of consumer in so many other parts of the world for 3M,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel that's going, and do you see that accelerating? And maybe a little perspective on that, and maybe healthcare too.
Yeah. It's improving. If you look upon the portfolio in Asia, generally speaking, but China specifically, the two biggest businesses there, based on the economic development, is always industrial and electronic and energy. That they are going together early on in the economy. So they are the two biggest for us. No surprise in that. Smaller is healthcare and consumer, based on that chart, and safety. So it's following the evolution. Now, if you think about the way I show that consumer is the fourth and healthcare the fifth, that is in the evolution of an economy. Sometime healthcare will go earlier, and the reason for that is that there is key opinion leaders that are driving the decision around purchases on a global base in healthcare. Versus consumer retail is brand, local brand, that is in your mind. So we all grew up at a place in the world where brands are becoming an important element very early. And that can take a long time to break through relative to what you do. So I would say in some cases, and China is one of those cases where healthcare is a little bit ahead of consumer for us. With that said, we're making good progress in consumer, but it will take a little bit longer time for the reason I said, that it takes time to build the brand equity in those environments, right? So, but it is the smallest business for us in China, and we are committed to build it as we move ahead. We were, if you think historically around the company, our consumer business in Europe is on the relatively small, and the reason for that is that back in the 50s or so, I don't think 3M was more focused on industrial at the time, and had a lot of big regional competitors that they decided at the time not to take on. Right, in China we have decided to take it on.
And you're not. I mean, there's a question of how are you late in that or not in China on consumer and these local competitors. Are they you know at scale? Any of them?
No, we are not late. But you know, to be honest, I would like to be further ahead, but it's not too late. And I think the important thing, you'll go back and think about the fundamentals of 3M, where brand equity is one. The brand equity is in that business, right? That's where people, if you think about 3M, after that, generally speaking, people think about Post-it, Scotch, Filtrete, Futuro, Ace, et cetera. That's right in that, and we will be there.
There's a broader investor question here about the emergence of Chinese competition across more of your markets and seeing it both locally and broadly. What is the competitive environment like?
Yeah, I think in all of the developing economies over time, the local competition is increasing in a way. And at, it can often be maybe into utility businesses or so forth that is more linked into to government and so forth. So I think you have always to look upon it. Well, there is local competition. You need to make sure that you invest locally in order to win that game with them. And that is why, you know, 3M has always invest locally for the domestic market. We have never, there's a couple of things I think is important to think about 3M. All investment we do overseas, we do for that local market. We never go to a country in order to capitalize on low labor cost and something in order to export. So we invest in order to capitalize on that local market. That is also important to think about. We never left the United States. So the expansion that we have done is for those markets. So as United States, you think, go back here now, 10 years or something, where you know, we talked about U.S., it's very slow, it's coming back. We never left. We have the same capability and capacity in the United States today as we had 10 years ago. So I feel good about that in terms of momentum going and shifting around the world, that we are able to serve the local markets in all those countries.
Well, we're on the topic, the U.S. investment, are you a believer in either industrial resurgence or a manufacturing resurgence in the U.S. based on cheap gas or anything else?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's coming. It's the output in manufacturing is improving in the United States. And as I said, for us, it's not to expand more of capacity necessarily because we never left. So, but we are doing well in the industrial businesses in the United States and also in healthcare, to be honest, right? So I think that there is an advantage over time, I assume, for United States in terms of manufacturing. Yes, I think so. So that's why I think it's important that you always balance your investment and make sure that you stay close to your capabilities. For us, you know, United States is it's $10 billion, it's one-third of the company, and we have all capabilities here in terms of research and development. The big center is here, right, and the manufacturing capabilities is here, and it's our home arena, right? Our brand equity is very strong. So United States, by definition, is a good place for us, even as it over time it's becoming smaller in the portfolio because international is growing by definition.
There's a question from investors here. So you have had price as a tailwind for some time now. Mm-hmm. To what extent are you seeing any kind of price deflation tendency, and are you challenged in terms of your ability to take price these days?
Yeah, we had, first of all, in most cases, we are price leaders. And there's two reasons why we can take price. One is research and development, you know, flow of new product that is adding more value. And the other reason why we'll take is in order when if we are in some type of deflation, then we will do it. First quarter, we had 1.2% price increase. And it was based on those two elements. As the year is going, I think it will moderate a little bit, but it will still be positive over the year for us. But we have always been able to run a good operation relative to price, and I think in all businesses except for electronics and energy, right? Electronic energy is different by definition, right? So it's a different game there. But all other, we are able to utilize our capabilities, and key to it is research and development. It's an absolutely key element for you, and that's why I'm saying that on the third strategy, investing in research and development is the heartbeat of the company. That is why we are able to give good return to shareholders.
So you mentioned electronics and energy mm-hmm. as a different beast in terms of pricing, which I understand. Mm-hmm. Does that make it less attractive for 3M as a market?
No. First of all, you have to separate electronic and yeah. energy. But if you take electronic, which let's talk about that. It's very attractive for 3M due to the fact that they are based on technologies, and it's which we know and can provide a lot of solution to them. And then number two, as soon as you expect in, it's price out, and we know how to do that. We are very efficient in terms of operational excellence. So I would say that the electronic space for us is very interesting. You have just to get the business model in place that can deal with it, right? And it's a very fast-moving business. But we can deal with it, and we are very happy with our business, and they are improving quite a bit over the years here. If you think about our margins, healthcare is the highest. Electronic and energy is on the low end in the company, still premium margins for that industry, right? So they're able to, and then you have the three other businesses just in the middle. So I'm very pleased with that business in that environment.
Okay. Question from the audience. Why are emerging market margins higher than developed market margins, and mm-hmm. how sustainable is that? You've only answered this question 50 times.
So. Yeah. Well, there is, if you think about our margins, generally speaking, the way to look upon it is actually to think about United States and West Europe is, so let's assume you have 22% margins, right? United States and West Europe is slightly lower than that. The difference is not in terms of research and development investment and or the price point for the products. The differentiation is in SG&A infrastructure in those type of countries. In the developed world. So we have learned over time, there was a different time when we built our business in the United States and when we built our business in West Europe versus today, right? So today we have a much leaner organization in place. We don't build subsidiaries, infrastructure in every single country, etc. So we are very effective in the way we're running it. So I would say it is sustainable over time as we go, and it's a focus for us in management to make sure we don't build up unnecessary infrastructure in those countries.
Here's a great question about your current utilization rates across your businesses. Mm-hmm. How do you look at that? What might they be, and what kind of incremental margins are possible if growth is actually higher than you expect?
First of all, we have said in terms of margins, we have said that the plan is around 22%. Can we run margins higher short term? Yeah, I think we could. But for me, so to do business is like putting on your glasses and you have on On one side you have a telescope, on the other side you have a microscope. And what we do is we drive with a microscope the return on that quarter, but we also do strategic investment as we go. And I think in the first quarter that was around 90 basis points of things that we did for that quarter specifically in terms of some small restructuring in West Europe, some investment in research and development, etc. So you need to do them as you go. So I think on the margin side, if it was very short term, could be more, but I don't think I do and the management do our job then relative to long-term investment for the company. In terms of utilization and capacity, we have capacity as we speak, and we will make some investment in some specific areas where there will be more demand as we go, right? And there's some areas around the world where demand will increase dramatically, I think, short to long term. And I'm thinking specifically in the area of respirators and so forth, which is a huge, huge business for us. We're doing very well, and I'm committed to make investments so we have capacity there to serve that market. It was a big deal in Asia.
Well, I know it's hard to generalize, but what's your target utilization, your ideal utilization typically?
Yeah, that's difficult to give a general answer to that. So I'll pass on it.
Yeah. Fine. Can you discuss maybe one or two of the new areas investing for disruptive technology R&D?
Yeah. Well, there is a couple of areas relative into the film area. This is a big opportunity for us where we have some new technologies that I think will revolutionary product for both the automotive industry and consumer electronics. Then we have one or two very interesting development into healthcare, specifically into what is mostly known for as wound management, where we see some technologies that I think will really improve the value for the hospital side as we move ahead.
Okay, I'm going to have to move on to portfolio management for the sake of time here. To what extent, as you move into larger acquisitions, is it more difficult for you for 3M to add value through brand distribution technology versus smaller acquisitions? How have you thought about that?
No, I think it's, so I think that's an important element. If I go back to those four elements, those are the elements that we have to look upon when we evaluate a potential acquisition to say, how can we really add value out from those four elements? And we will be able to do that. So the important thing is that you attach as many of those four elements before you do it. Now, history of 3M relative to acquisitions is we have done relatively well. We have we did in healthcare, the ESPE was an acquisition, Unitech was an acquisition. Those are both in the orthodontic business. Arisen, which is infection prevention, done very well, and also we did multiple acquisitions. And in fact, the whole health information system was an acquisition from the beginning. We did Aero Technology, was into personal safety, including Pelter, did very well. We did ACE and Futuro in consumer, and we did Winterthur in industrial and abrasive. All of them did well. And if you think about it, they match very well to those four, if not all in all cases, but to the four elements. Where we did not do so well was on smaller acquisitions. So small acquisitions have been more struggle for us, I would say, and so there's a learning there. They don't need to be huge, but I'm not keen to do too small, far away, that we not get leverage on those four elements in the company. So I would not say that it's more difficult on bigger that you can utilize those four fundamental 3M strengths.
Okay, and there's a question around the acquisition environment. Could you describe the current acquisition, competition from PE, price development of acquisitions?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of money on the sideline, and I think the point here is to make sure that you evaluate yourself what you would like to do, right? I mean, so you have to make sure that, and I feel good that we have done the portfolio analysis work. We know the four elements that would add value for us. And then after that, we have to look upon it. And it should be into markets that are end markets that are sustainable over time. And over time, it should be accretive to the financial targets we have laid out. So I think it's as simple as that. As you know, we are very we are a company that are very process oriented and very good at project management. So we are working this system very well, and we'll do the right thing for the shareholders relative to the money.
There are three, four cards here around the strategic review businesses. Maybe comment on one question around the percentage of earnings again, or revenue from those, and to what your course of action is like, you know, or, that you're looking at in terms of sale, reduction, leadership changes. What kinds of things are you doing to manage it?
When we started, when that process started like a little more than 2 years ago, that bucket down there, the value of that was $2.5 billion. Today, that's slightly below $1 billion. Action have been taken, if you're in that category, you either you go on and fix it as a stand, you combine it, you harvest it, or you divest or exit. We have combined a couple of them, and we have divested one, which was the fishing business that was divested. So progress has been made in all cases to the better. As I said, as a is another billion there as we speak. But it's not so much that if there's a billion or one and a half or 500 million. The point is, this is an ongoing process. It's an ongoing process where you evaluate the businesses the whole time. So I think the important thing, the objective by definition is not, if you're in that category, to say that you need to divest. The objective, that is maybe the last one. The thing is, how do you fix it? Can you combine it so you get more relevance with customers in the front end and drive out cost internally? And or is there other technologies that you can utilize in the company so you harvest that business based on the front end of the organization? But I think often people are, and I think it's natural, people go often to the conclusion that it's a harvest or it's a divestiture immediately. Not necessarily.
Okay, and on that chart, another question here also, you have 10-plus areas of what I'll call middle children are left off of the big focus areas.
Yeah.
You know, how are you managing that?
Yeah, those are businesses that are doing just fine. They are businesses where you have combined, so you have businesses before that was traffic safety system that was combined with security systems. So what they are doing is we have moved them type of out from a strategic review in there, and now we give, and in that case, we also made an acquisition actually to bolster that position, and now we have to see if they will go into push forward or into heartland. They will not fall back, right? So those are businesses that are doing just fine. We just maintain the investment in them and have given them the resources in order to improve, and now it's up to that leadership to move ahead. You made a comment which I think is important. You talked about leadership. The other thing that is important when you do that portfolio analysis is you also then get an understanding, a better understanding of what leadership is required to lead businesses in all those categories, because it's slightly different. And if you don't know where certain businesses belong, it's very easy for you that you maybe pick a leader that is not totally suited for that category. So I think that's an other very important advantage if you believe in leadership as you move ahead.
So given we're running out of time, the last question here from the audience, I'm gonna expand it a little bit. As technology evolves to connected cars and homes and wearable devices, how does 3M participate? And then I'd like you to add also maybe comment on the importance of digitization and analytics and things like that for 3M.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we realigned the organization in electronics based on the evolution there. So we participate very actively in all of this relative to, global interconnectivity. It is a big, huge opportunity for 3M, not only from selling solution to it, but is also, when you start to think about it, is also how you can utilize workforce around the world. Because people can now work at different places around the world. And you need to attract the best brains in order for you to compete on a global base. So there's two elements into this when I think about it. This commercialized in terms of what you do. And then we just formed a division called Display Materials and System Division, totally focused in on that space you're talking about. So that's one, and that's a big opportunity for us, and we've been in that business for a long time. But then I think in terms of global interconnectivity, that is a mega trend that is, for companies like 3M, should look upon that also as an opportunity to utilize more of the workforce around the world, specifically women. Specifically women in some part of the world where it could be difficult for them in order to move around in big cities and so forth. So I think there is a big opportunity in both sides for us, both on the workforce side and in terms of the product sales.
Okay. All right, Inge, we're out of time. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.